remember when I was 14 or 15, lying in bed late into the night, reading Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. It was written in 1960, so even in the mid-70s it was a bit outdated, but it was a fascinating read. Maltz was a plastic surgeon who noticed that not all his patients came out of his corrective surgery happier than they'd gone in. Many were, of course, delighted, but quite a few continued to see the defect he had corrected as though it was still there. A patient might insist they could see the bump on the nose he'd removed, for example. He wanted to know why this happened. He didn't use the word dysmorphia. It wasn't commonly used then as it is now, but that was what he was exploring. Dysmorphia is a belief that one's face or body is somehow wrong or inadequate, which, if it reaches the level of a diagnosable disorder, can become an obsession with severe embarrassment and anxiety that might drive someone to seek extreme treatments or even just hide away from the world. And this requires professional help. But most of us, if we aren't exactly seeing something that isn't there, tend to exaggerate our own perceived faults. We peer at our faces in the mirror for a close-up of those pores and blotchy patches of skin that makeup would always cover on screen, for example, and we compare ourselves unfavourably with movie stars, who are already blessed with exceptional beauty and access to the best makeup experts. I battle against dissatisfaction with my baggy eyes and dark under-eye circles, and I confess, I've contemplated surgery for them more than once. And that's the power of the beauty industry. If it didn't make you feel inadequate, you'd never be tempted to buy its products. It's the same with the slimming industry. I'd bet that the vast majority of women and a fair few men succumb to some degree of dysmorphia. Magazines, TV commercials and supermodel billboards have been making us feel inadequate for a very long time, and now there's social media too. The Sunday supplement health sections recommend 50 burpees and 3-minute planks, and there's no end to the weight loss diets that won't work. In culture, we get jokes about it. The fast shows Does My Bum Look Big in This? But then there's the 1930s song Keep Young and Beautiful. It's your duty to be beautiful. Keep young and beautiful if you want to be loved. That makes you feel great when you're getting older. Or how about Faye Weldon's The Life and Loves of a She-Devil? That was a very uncomfortable watch because it showed that the only way the protagonist, who was large and ugly, could win in the world was to become beautiful herself. But in the smartphone age, how on earth can children avoid growing up without feeling body shame? I turned to Tamsin Broster for some help. Tamsin spent 20 years trying to make herself thin. You name it, she tried it, and each time the weight would come back and then some. In 2018, perimenopause hit, her body image nosedived, and her life became fixated on getting thin at any cost, leading to a near breakdown that resulted in her leaving a very high-flying career of over 20 years because she just couldn't cope with the anxiety and self-loathing. She slowly began rebuilding her self-confidence and untangling her relationship with food and her body. Tamsin now helps women all over the world discover health and happiness without dieting and restrictions. She's an expert in emotional eating, and through her Menno Thrive program, she supports women to stop letting their body size or shape dictate their self-worth.
It's kind of always been around. People, oh, my bum's too big, my nose is too big, you know, whatever. That judgment of self or others about, there's always been an ideal of appearance, which changes with fashion and everything. Mm-hmm. But it seems to have become epidemic since internet, social media, I guess, would you say?
Yeah, I would say. I think that's had a huge influence on how we not only see ourselves, but how we compare ourselves to others.
Yeah.
And I think the media has a really big role to play. If you look at any kind of mainstream TV programs, the body diversity just isn't there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not exclusive to just programs like Love Island or, yeah, you know, any of that. It's not. They are particularly at that, you know, I would say the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
But it's even in normal mainstream things that we, yeah, watch. And I think once you had your eyes open to that, that's not the norm, mm-hmm, and that that's actually not how we should, in quotes, look, you realize how bad it is.
Yeah.
You know, how women, particularly women, are portrayed as the leads, and how anyone in a large body either doesn't exist, or they're kind of like a supporting act, or they're,
yes,
you know, the way they're depicted as their character,
yeah,
after, like, the stupid one, or the, I don't know, what they're not the romantic friend.
They're not the romantic,
yeah. Comic friend, that kind
or
of
the
stuff.
The maternal friend.
Yeah, like, and people don't realise how much that filters down into our kind of messaging, and it's, all of us have it in us.
Yeah.
We all have fat bias.
Yeah.
Because it's ingrained. We don't, it's not something we, any of us escape. It's whether we're challenging it or not, which is what I want to, you know.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you have these situations where this is a thing that you're inclined to have these thoughts, and it's that second reaction that matters. So you see that, whatever, that person's got a big nose,
yeah,
it's something you see, but it's that second thought that counts, isn't it?
Yes, it's really understanding, like, what is happening in your body, and what your thoughts and stuff, and catching that in the moment, and I'm recognizing, oh yeah, that's because I've been told that that's not the norm, and because somebody is telling me, constantly filtering in through in different ways, what is the norm.
Yeah,
you know, that's why.
Yeah, and this year we had Barbie. Supposedly some kind of feminist take on Barbie.
Did you watch it?
I was not convinced that was a feminist movie.
I mean, it's interesting
Hollywood feminism.
How I found that film fascinating, and I did love it, but I also didn't. You know, I love the fact they had a little bit of body diversity in there, but we're not really, it wasn't breaking much ground.
Not much.
But also in terms of the way they depicted it being like the other way around, I don't think that's what they were trying to do, but I think that's how we were perceiving it. It's like, actually, when the women were at like the top of the tree, they were working their backsides off and the men were doing nothing. And that's not how it is, you know, in a patriarchal system. That's not what's happening. So yeah, it was really interesting. I think it was a great step forward, but I don't think it was there. But I loved it for so many other things. It's really hard for me to look, because when I dive into this conversation about Barbie, I'm like, I really love that it happened and it exists. And I love the fact that, you know, Greta was taking that forward and bringing that to life.
There were ideas in there. But you're just looking at Margot Robbie for 90 minutes or whatever.
Exactly.
Well, what's the point? That, because it's astounding. She looks so astounding. But that's like working against everything else that's that film is supposed to be saying, in a way.
Yeah, pretty much. In terms of body size. And this is what it was trying to actually bringing up, that conversation, wasn't it? That, you know, the fact that she was so horrified about this tiny piece of cellulite and that kind of stuff. I feel like that's what they were trying to do, was to say, like, this is not attainable. This is not a body size that you should be even trying to get to. Or I think that's what, in my mind, that's what I tell myself they were trying to say, was, this is madness. We're all different. We're all different body sizes. But I think it may be lost because you're so distracted by the fact that she's this idea of what every woman thinks it
is. Body. Anyway, let's move on from the Barbie. Because, I mean, just in terms of good health, I mean, mental health and physical health, you know, what do we need to do? Do we need more gyms without mirrors? I mean, what do we need to do to help ourselves? Just stop thinking about our appearance all the time, because it's not the only thing about being a human being is the way we look. It isn't. It really isn't.
No, it isn't. I think for me, I think that's a really big question, but I don't think the answer lies on the individual. I think what we have to remember is that we are human and that we're not to blame, because actually, because we've had the likes of Margot Robbie's perfect bodies rammed down our throat, we are going to be thinking that we don't measure up. But there are other ways, more harmful ways. I would say the media is actually the least harmful way that body image is pushed upon us. If you think about what needs to happen, is weight stigma needs to disappear. And it's not going to, whilst we have top-down policies coming down from the government, we're still working towards you know, people being in a certain BMI. We already know that BMI is absolute trash.
Yeah.
It was never designed to be a measure of individual health. And it's also extremely racist because it's only based on white men.
Right.
So if you look back at the history, and there's a really good episode that Maintenance Phase did on this, which is the history of the BMI. It was only taking a picture of, you know, back in the 1800s of white men. So it excludes so many people from this conversation.
Yeah.
You know, so many different sized bodies, so many different races and genders. We just don't have, you know, we shouldn't be using that. And until that disappears and until we get some sort of systemic change, I think we are inevitably going to always be at war with our bodies. That's my perception of it.
Yeah.
And that's why my little corner of the internet, my little corner of what I try and do in the world is just to help, not help women see that their bodies are fine as they are, because they are. That's the easy part.
Yeah.
The harder thing that I try and tackle it, and I do this, you know, with my clients one to one, is to show them that systemic stuff, because actually I don't think a lot of people realize it's so ingrained in our entire culture. My daughter is in this school and she's 9 years old, and she is being taught through books, through education, through their healthy eating system, that if she eats too much, it's going to change her body in a way that she shouldn't be. You know, she, you know, they're already getting that fat bias is coming through in that way. You know, too much sugar, too much this, too much that. And it doesn't matter where you personally feel in that. It's that they're not being shown that you can be healthy in any size body. And that's what we need to kind of get to understand.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. So starting childhood, that's really very, very sad. And what do you do about that as a mum?
It's difficult, but there is, and I think it's just kids will see what you model for them. Obviously, I am only part of the equation. Both my kids are in school, you know, more than they are with me. They're there 5 days a week and they're with me 2 days a week.
Yes.
So it is hard, but it's opening up that conversation. It's also that they get to see that I'm not at war with my body, and I'm very much in a plus size body, and I don't shame myself for what I eat. I don't shame myself for how I look. I don't stand in front of the mirror grabbing at my thighs going, oh, I look disgusting. I'm in all of the photos when my husband remembers that I am here and I exist. You're not going to like to take pictures. And it is just that it's all you really can do. And talking to them about that, I'm very careful with, especially with my daughter, and I will be with both, but she's that bit older.
Yeah.
She's a preteen, so she's going to be 10 this year. We're starting to have conversations about periods and bodies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's, I will buy her a book, but I will go through it first to make sure it's quite body positive, it's quite body neutral.
Yes.
Even just so that it's not telling her she should look a certain size. And, you know, encouraging them to eat intuitively, not telling them they're eating too much sugar, but recognizing that I am in control of what they eat and allowing them to make choices and understanding that what health means, but not talking about health through sizing things. And also, I don't allow them to be weighed at school. So I don't know if you know, but there's a weighing system in school. So they get weighed at reception and then they'll be weighed in year six. So year six is when you're about to go to secondary school. Goodness me, it's been around forever. I wouldn't know, actually. I couldn't tell you how long.
I mean, I'm old, so I don't remember any of that.
Do you know, it's one of those things, and what the healthcare system has done cleverly is linked it to having an eye test, a hearing test. I think it's eye or hearing or both. Anyway, it's on this form, and you have to be very aware, and I do talk about it every year when it's coming up on my socials to remind people, you know, you don't have to let your kids be weighed.
Gosh.
And even if you're not concerned about their weight, even if you've got a child who's in a, you know, fairly straight sized body, you could still opt them out, because that helps us all, because it shows the system that we don't want our kids measured by that size, because eating disorders can start as young as six, and body dysmorphia, eating disorders, disordered eating can start as young as six.
Yeah.
And that's very young. And when you start messing around with a child's body, regardless of whether you think it fits into this BMI narrative,
really dangerous.
If you do that before the age of 25, it has really, they are much more likely to be in a bigger body later on in life. So if that's what you're trying to avoid, interfering at any age before the end of 25 is not the way to go. Dieting is just making us bigger. And if that's what we are trying to avoid,
or
then
creating,
we need to be doing it.
Yeah, eating disorders of all stripes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult. But that's one, that's like my little piece of activism that I can do in school. I have never really felt like I want to go marching over there to tell them to do things differently. I do occasionally buy, at the end of year, the teachers, the end of year present, I buy them Body Happy Kids. It's a book by Molly Forbes, and it's fantastic. It's all about this subject.
Excellent.
And how this affects children. And I that's my end of year gift.
Nice activism there.
I'm like, yes, just in case you wondered what I sort of think about this. It's just because even if they hand it on to someone else, I feel like that's a useful book.
Really
good. We're talking about bodies and disordered eating and all sorts of stuff and how it affects children.
It's so interesting. So that, goodness. And I'm 60. So I'm coming into the other end of the scale where aging is to be shamed,
mm-hmm.
and I am inundated. I don't know why. And if you hover over anything on Instagram, you get inundated with loads more.
Don't
you? And you can't help it. So there'll be eye creams, lip creams, masking, makeups, and all this. And it is just a torrent. And you can't. Yeah, you're expected to.
Yeah,
I don't know. Fill your lips with goo and.
Yeah,
we all
have body autonomy. I'm all for women doing whatever makes them feel good. But I think we have to remember why we are signing up to this. I love my clothes. I love my makeup.
I
get to choose what we sort of sign up to, what we don't sign up to. But I do think there's so much that we need to really look at in terms of how men are just allowed to age and allowed to exist. No one is ever telling my husband that he looks unprofessional because he hasn't put his face of makeup on in the morning. I have been told that many times, and I feel that, and I felt that. I've been networking this morning, as you know. I've been out to an event. I put my face on. It's just part of that. That is, not something that I have got used to or have felt the need to let go of. But I know some women really want to. They really want to just not wear makeup or feel ever expected to. But we also want to be able to walk into a room and not apologize for it. So I could have easily gone, and I'm confident enough to do that, to go to an event and not wear makeup, but I probably would have spent the morning going, excuse my face, which is wrong, isn't it? Because we would have done, that's what women do. We're like, oh, excuse my hair, excuse my house, which is what I've done this
morning. I came out and put makeup to come and see you because I don't wear makeup at home. But I have shame if I don't. I do. There's shame there. It is there.
It is there.
And I don't want to frighten people.
I think we need to see more women without makeup. We'll have Pamela Anderson when she walked the red carpet with no makeup on.
Magnificent. Did you watch her documentary?
No, I haven't.
So good.
Oh, I didn't know there was one.
So good. I do. I think it's Netflix.
No doubt.
Worth it,
isn't it? Or to lead to Netflix.
She's a star.
I would love to watch that. But I got a bit angry about that because I got angry about the fact that it was news. I was like, why is this news? Why is it a conventionally attractive, wealthy, woman with access to means is news that she walked a red carpet without makeup on? And that shows you how liberating, how women, I think, are desperate to be liberated of all this stuff, of all the shoulds and wants to be's. I think we are craving a freedom from that. That's how I feel. That's what women are kind of, and I think menopause, which I obviously focus on mostly, is a time where we are like, why am I conforming to this stuff? And we're questioning it. And I love it. And I'm here for it all. I'm like, yes, let's talk about it. Let's question it all.
So good. That was so good. Is there anything we're missing? That I read, I don't know if you read The Guardian, there's a letter to Philippa Perry, the psychotherapist. And it was, I'm 65 years old. I am so ugly. I absolutely hate the way I look. I am so depressed. So it was heartbreaking.
It is,
heartbreaking. But the term dysmorphia is quite recent. I read a book by Maxwell Maltz written in 1960, and he was a plastic surgeon who noticed that he'd fix people's bumpy noses and whatever. And some of them would be delighted, but some of them would not be delighted and would still got a big nose and they would never be happy. And he thought, what's going on here? And he didn't use the term, but that's what was going on because you see what you see.
Yeah, you do.
And then the lip filler thing, which is weird. These massive lips. And how could you possibly think that looks anything like that?
What you said in the beginning about bodies changing and bodies trends changing, if you think back to
pre-war times, I guess, like a lot, you know, many, many years ago. I mean, and this is maybe something that you want to sort of capture, but bodies were celebrated as being a bigger body. I would have been seen as a wealthy, successful woman.
Beautiful.
Because I'm plus size.
Oh, you are beautiful.
Now, I'm not considered successful woman because I'm not the shape of the day.
Yeah.
And that is something that I think we need to remember. And when we went through war times, women were encouraged to, again, dieting and having a smaller body is so steeped in racism, because we were, during sort of slavery times, we were encouraged to separate, have different bodies than black women. So white women were encouraged to be thin. So they weren't seen, and they created this idea
dainty.
That anyone in a bigger body was not feminine, was, you know, sexually deviant, that kind of stuff. There was lots of reasons. There's a great book, Fearing the Black Body.
Your buxom wench is like a lower class thing anyways, and it's
that's
scene.
That's come from that, though. Yeah. That's later on.
Okay.
But this was about separate, because you can't create any kind of segregation unless you change things and make something desirable and something not desirable. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So white women were encouraged to stay thin. They were also then encouraged in post-war times to stay thin to keep their husbands. And this is why we talk about
keep young and beautiful.
You know,
it's your duty to be beautiful.
It's very steeped in patriarchy, you know, standards and everything else like that.
Yeah.
And it keeps us conforming, because let's face it, when we're hungry and we're not feeding ourselves and we're desperately trying to be thinner, we're very distracted and we're not taking over the world. I always say, if women were like much more interested in the pay gap than a thigh gap, we'd be somewhere. We'd be moving forward. That's my motto.
There's your motto. Brilliant. Pay gap, yeah, not thigh gap.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant.
A long way to go.
Brilliant. I keep thinking back how... in the days of, for centuries, it was corsets and then these massive skirts. And I was thinking, wow, how restricting they were and everything. And actually, I think our bodies at the top tend to be a bit smaller than the bodies. And that hides such a multitude. I think those big old skirts were brilliant.
Yeah.
I think we lost something. You know, we're supposed to be liberating the corset and all that. But actually, to have all this bit underneath free.
How lovely. Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just the thing, because women's bodies are just not allowed to grow or change. And this is why I find that so many of my clients are in that menopausal stage, because it's the stage where they are so ashamed of their bodies, but particularly their stomachs and their midsections.
Because
it's like, you're at that point where you're no longer having children, or you're no longer doing all the things that people think women's bodies are here to do. And it's a real phase of shame. And like we said before we came on about like the Davina McCalls of this world, they are showing that you can be fit and you can be 50 and you can be this and you can be that. But actually, they're genetically, Davina McCall was never in a bigger body. Let's face it. She was never in a bigger body. So she always had that genetic grounding to be slim. And she's got access to things. Like, it's just, we have to remember all the other factors. And I think that's the thing when we're really beating ourselves up over not looking a certain way. Have a think about who you're looking at and what they have access to financially, resource-wise, you know, all of the things they have access to.
So interesting that, like you say, these fashions and fads that come, so the liberation of women, ditching the corset, long straight waists that were only for bean poles. So that's not liberating for anyone who's got a rounder shape. And then there's the curvy shape of the 50s. And then if you're a bean pole, that didn't fit. And now, well, it seems to be there's only one kind of fashion at a time. So it's not one, there's not like a range of fashions at a time for every body type, is there? It's very, very odd.
But keeping these fashion things moving is very intentional, because
of course
95% of us are not going to. You know, women are constantly contorting themselves and trying to fit into something and feeling like a failure when they don't. And actually, we really need to zoom out a little bit and take ourselves out of that game. Because when we take ourselves out of the race, there's no money, is there? Because you just have to follow the money. It, you know, the diet industry alone is worth billions, you know, billions of pounds. If it was working, it wouldn't be worth that kind of money.
No. Well, it's like the drug industry and all the rest of it.
It's the whole thing. And now you've got all the Ozempic and stuff like that, which is, you know, being touted as the solution to
what's that?
Ozempic and the weight loss drugs and everything else. Like
okay.
that.
Oh,
this
gosh.
Is now being touted as like the fix. And actually, it's not. I did a podcast on this with the Fat Doctor. And actually, what we don't realize is the weight gain after using these drugs is phenomenal. It's very quick.
Oh, Lord.
And also, you cannot go on these. These things don't work unless you want a calorie controlled diet.
Oh.
So actually, we're not really taking away the headache, which is what
no.
people want, is to take away the headache of having to diet. It's not actually doing that.
Oh.
It's not a solution. It's another short-term fix, which will eventually lead to weight gain. And if that is what you're trying to avoid, I would avoid them at all costs. It's very difficult. But you have to dig into this stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's kind of what I try and do.
And get angry.
And help people to see
yes.
that this is not the answer, you know. Yeah, tricky.
Brilliant, Tamsin. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Loads there.
Thank you.
Do check out Tamsin and the work she does, including her Menno Thrive program. The links are in the text for this podcast. When she was talking about the history of BMI, she referred to a podcast called Maintenance Phase, a series that debunks junk science, silly health fads and scams, and there are over 100 episodes. There's a lot of rubbish out there feeding our neuroses, isn't there? Tamsin's takeaways are encouraging, and I'm glad there are people like her fighting the good fight against body shaming, because it's not easy. And let's face it, other people can be horribly cruel. The lady whose agony column letter I mentioned earlier also wrote that she'd overheard a man calling her a hag. I mean, what the hell? We need to keep reminding ourselves to be kind to each other and to ourselves. As Michelle Armitage and I were talking about in the Shadow episode, we all have at least a few vicious little reflex thoughts, usually formed by pain. But the most helpful strategy is always to withhold or refuse that first response, creating space to figure out a better one. That window of opportunity to think and do things differently is an incredibly powerful mental skill that's well worth learning. I can decide, for example, when I clock my undeniable eye bags, not to go straight to labelling them as hideous. What am I doing? They're part of my Dutch heritage and identity, my character. And if I'm looking too knackered, I can always help things along with a little paint to take the anxiety down a bit. Then I can go and focus on something else. Where you put your attention is everything. Until next time, thanks for listening and take care.